You're listening to The Continuing Adventures of Billy Barbarian, written and read by J.R. Murdock. For more information, please visit ofgnomesanddwarves.com or jrmurdock.com. If Billy hadn't been secured to his location on the stage by his promise to Celine, he'd have scaled the stage structure to get a better view of whatever it was that caused the stars to blink in and out of existence. It had to be huge. But because of all the light inside the stadium, not many of the stars could be seen, and that caused the shape to be indistinct. Large, but impossible to make out. It was like trying to look up from the bottom of a lake and make out the sun. After several long moments, and near the end of the first song of Celine's last set, it disappeared. Billy couldn't make out what direction it moved, but he could tell it no longer remained at the far end of the stadium. Promise or no, he had to see what the potential threat could be. He waited for the rise in music to signal the end of the song. Celine turned to him with a smile. He didn't return the smile, but instead pointed up and ran to a ladder to ascend. She nodded her approval, and that was all Billy needed. She was all that mattered at this point. Not Fat, not Jack, not Iman, not even Mr. Stump. Nothing mattered but making sure that Celine survived the night. As he reached up to take hold of the ladder's rung, pain stung his arm. The same stinging pain hit the freshly stitched wound in his calf. He gritted his teeth against the pain, but could feel a fresh trickle of blood start to seep down his leg. It tickled a small point of clarity into his mind, a clarity that demanded he get to the top of the stage's structure and get a better view of whatever was in the sky. He made his way to the catwalk, but still wasn't high enough. He saw one of the crew in black at the top of the stage. A shiver ran down his spine, thinking of Ateo. Those closest to Celine seemed to be the most dangerous.
"How do I get to the top of the stage?" Billy shouted to the crewman.
The man pointed to the rear of the stage. Billy squinted and could just make out a small ladder that disappeared through the canopy that covered the stage, presumably to keep the performers protected from the elements. He worked his way along the narrow catwalk. Though he had his axe with him, he felt empty without his pack. Why had he left it in Celine's room? He rubbed his shoulder and knew why he'd left it. He felt the blood seep into his shirt. Still, he would have felt better if he had his pack on. The ladder groaned under his weight. It hadn't been designed to hold a 250-pound barbarian. It had been designed to hold the small men who scurried around the catwalks. None of them, hidden under this canopy, would have seen what Billy saw. Billy was doubtful anyone else had seen the brief disappearance of a few stars. His pocket vibrated just as his head poked out the top of the stage's canopy. A light breeze caught his hair. At the top lay a small platform. Billy sat upon this and pulled the orb from his pocket. It vibrated intensely, as if whoever was trying to call him needed him urgently.
"This is Billy."
"Billy, where you go?"
"I'm at the top of the stage. I saw something and had to check it out. This could be important."
"No, not important. Come down, now."
Fat wouldn't understand. Though Billy was happy that Fat was up and about, the small man didn't know what Billy had seen, and Billy didn't know how to explain it.
"I saw something. I have to check it out. I'll be right back down."
"No, you come down now."
Billy put the orb back in his pocket. From the top of the stage, he could see an incredible number of stars compared to being on stage and nearly blinded by light. It didn't compare to the north, but he could see enough stars. Even the one Phil claimed to be his home drifted across the sky. Billy still had trouble grasping that concept, but trusted Phil told the truth. The expanse of stars appeared unbroken to the far end of the stadium. Billy opened his eyes wide and tried to allow them to adjust to the darkness. He continued to watch and wait for whatever sat on the end of the stadium to give up its position. It then occurred to Billy that whatever it had been could have been flying much like the dragon Celine and Stump flew in on. He cursed himself for not thinking of that right away. He stood up and scanned the skies in all directions. He looked at each spot of sky, looking for any indication that something hid among the black between the stars. He narrowed his eyes and concentrated, looking for even the smallest sign of what lay up there. Again his pocket vibrated. Fat would have to wait until Billy dismissed whatever he'd seen as not being a threat. This could be the same person that used Celine's people as assassins. It could be a new assassin. It could be birds for all Billy knew. He didn't want to take that. A massive blackness in the stars grew quickly, coming up from the side of the stage. Billy thought of diving to the side to avoid whatever came at him, but knew that he'd fall through the canopy, and without being able to see what lay below, he'd likely miss a catwalk and plummet to the stage below. He stood his ground and prepared for it to hit him. It didn't hit him. Instead, it veered away from him, but only slightly. Billy made out the head and neck of a large black dragon, then the claws, and he dove. He didn't think about why. He just dove and grabbed onto the massive beast. He dangled precariously from its claw. And as far as he could tell, the beast didn't even notice the additional weight. Billy tried to find somewhere to put his hands. The scales lay flat and didn't provide good purchase for climbing. He adjusted his grip on the smooth claws and watched as the city raced beneath them. He felt sick, but steeled himself and reached up to its leg to grab hold of the mighty claw tucked under the dragon's chest. Each thick scale, nearly 2 feet in diameter, denied his hands anywhere to hold on to. He wasn't going to be able to hold on for long, and his calf started to throb. In a matter of minutes, he'd be plunging headfirst for the ground. The dragon banked. Billy took the shift in weight to scrabble at the side of the dragon and get nearer its back before it righted itself. The turn it made was a wide bank, and he had ample time to scale the side and wait for it to right before stepping onto its back. He stood on the back next to a large cabin, much like the one on the back of Celine's dragon. He looked through a large round opening that looked inside the cabin and saw a man staring back at him, obviously the pilot. Billy didn't know if he should attack or wave at the man, but being that he controlled the dragon they both were on, he decided for the latter.
"Can I come inside?"
The man, blinking unbelievably, then motioned for Billy to enter through the opening. The pilot, in a tiny control room filled with dials and levers, didn't address Billy, but pointed for him to go through a door in the back of the cabin. Billy found the inside of the cabin comfortable. It was nearly as large as his home in the north, but far better furnished with leather seats, glass tables, and gas sconces hung from the walls. The smell of sliced meats and cheeses filled the interior, along with a hint of tobacco.
"Come inside and make yourself comfortable," a man leaning over the largest of the glass tables said, and pointed to a chair for Billy to sit in.
The man wore thick red robes embroidered with black and green designs that swirled and entwined across the fabric. His head had only the faint traces of hair, and those were long and gray. His wrinkled face seemed to only serve to hold up his gigantic spectacles that magnified his eyes to 10 times the size they should be. Billy flinched when the man looked up.
"I beg your pardon, good man."
He took off the spectacles and looked over Billy. His chin protruded out nearly as far as his nose, and both were so close together it looked as if his face was eating his mouth, a mouth comprised of tightly pursed lips. His squinty eyes shifted from side to side and looked over Billy.
"I'm Billy Barbarian."
"And you're a trespasser. I assume you know that."
Billy thought about that for a moment. "But we're not on any land, and your pilot did allow me to come inside. He could have just pushed me off."
"But you're on my property, and quite uninvited. I've quite an important task. You're interrupting me. Give me one good reason why I should not cast you off my dragon."
Billy doubted this old man had the strength to push even the smallest mouse off the dragon. Still, he didn't want to offend him until he knew the reason the old man was flying the dragon around the stadium.
"I'm Billy."
"You said that already."
"And I'm protecting Celine Dijon. When I saw your dragon flying around the stadium..."
"You saw my dragon flying around the stadium?"
"Well, I didn't exactly see it. I saw the stars blinking in and out and knew something was over the stadium. Being that I was hired to protect Celine, I had to find out who was up here and why."
The old man sat back and rubbed his chin and puckered and unpuckered his lips as he thought this over. He took up a slice of meat from the tray on the side of his chair and wrapped it around a piece of cheese and popped it into his mouth. Billy's stomach rumbled. He wanted to ask for a bite to eat but refrained. The old man smacked his lips once and swallowed.
"So you wish to know what I'm doing over the stadium, eh?"
"Yes."
"And being the protectorate of Celine Dijon, you expect me to divulge this information willingly?"
"Yes."
"So you have no idea who I am?"
"Should I?"
The old man chuckled.
"Are you serious? How long have you been in Sethopolis?"
"I just came into town today from the north, where my home is. I had hoped to find a job and find out more about the city."
The old man rubbed his chin, then ate another piece of meat and cheese. Billy licked his lips. The man offered the tray to Billy. Billy tried not to be greedy, but took up several pieces of meat.
"Slow down. I've got plenty more, should you still be hungry. Go ahead, take the tray. I don't need to eat nearly as much as I do."
To accent his comment, he patted his stomach.
I'm sorry, I just get so hungry when I'm working.
Looks like you need to do some healing as well. Mind if I ask where you got those?
The man pointed to the freshly bloodied cuts on Billy's shoulder and calf.
I got those protecting Celine. Some monsters tried to kill her just a little while ago. A doctor helped stitch me up. Even earlier, I stopped her pilot from shooting her with a flaming crossbow bolt.
The man's eyes widened as Billy spoke. The beady orbs glistened as they focused on Billy.
Tell me more. Has anything else interesting happened down there?
Billy stopped eating. He'd forgotten his duty. He cleared his throat.
I think, first, I need to know your name and what you're doing over the stadium.
Quite right, quite right. I'm so sorry to have forgotten my manners. You can call me Seth. I'm over the stadium because I'm looking for the source of a massive energy concentration that I don't like the looks of, and I want to make sure it's dispersed appropriately. First, I must discover where it's coming from.
Billy's mouth hung open in confusion.
Huh?
Someone's using lots of magic in the stadium, and I don't think it's for good.
Oh.
So tell me, could you tell if magic was used with these assassination attempts? Tell me more about the monsters.
Billy, in between bites of meat and cheese, told Seth about the monsters with their blade-tipped tentacles. The old man's attention never wavered as Billy spun his tail and went on about each aspect of what had transpired that evening. He did his best to leave out very specific details.
So who hired you?
That was one fact Billy didn't know if he should reveal. At that moment, his pocket vibrated violently. He quickly placed his hand over the orb, as if he'd be able to squish it and stop it from vibrating. But the ringing wouldn't stop.
Is that something you need to attend to?
I can't.
Why not?
I'm not supposed to.
Not supposed to answer that ringing? It sounds like you're getting a call from someone. Most peculiar. Let me see what you've got in your pocket.
Billy reluctantly reached into his pocket and produced the orb. It flashed, vibrated, and rang. He didn't know why, but he trusted the old man. Seth sat forward and looked closely at the orb.
I've never seen its equal. Is it a communication device?
Well, yes. I think about who I want to call, and as long as they've got one of these, I can talk to them.
And vice versa, I presume. Absolutely marvelous.
Seth leaned over the large glass table.
And it hardly registers on my detector.
Billy looked at the glass, but couldn't tell what the black, orange, and red blobs meant. The orb continued its persistent vibrating.
Perhaps you should answer that.
Billy frowned.
This is Billy.
Billy, you come back down now. We need you. Where are you at?
I'm not on the stage anymore.
Billy looked at Seth and shrugged. Seth nodded.
I'm on a dragon flying over the stadium.
You what?
The connection cut off.
It does appear that you need to get back to work. I will do my best to deposit you as close to the stadium as I can. I would love to stay and chat with you, but I'm afraid I've got some very important things to attend to as well.
But you never told me what you're doing over the stadium.
Yes, I did. I need to see what the power surges are for.
And once you find out?
I'll either stop them or the person causing them. Either way, I'll deal with them once I know what they're for. For all I know, Celine is using them in her finale. I would hate to interrupt that. But if it's something more sinister, then I'll need to address it.
Are you saying that this magic could put Celine in danger?
Most certainly. Say, you never did answer my question. Who hired you?
Billy bit his lip.
I'm not supposed to say.
Billy, I need to know everything I can about what's going on down there if I'm to access what the magic is for.
How is knowing who hired me going to help you with that?
Just tell me, and I'll know.
Billy closed his eyes and squished his face up as if it to help him with saying the name. He didn't want to, but he felt compelled to.
Iman.
Seth gasped.
What is it?
Are you sure you got that name right?
Yes.
Billy thought about it for a moment.
Yes. Jack said it was Iman.
Who is Jack?
Jack in the Box and Fat Cow. I'm working with them on this job to protect Celine.
Seth got up from his chair and shuffled to a small bookshelf. He took a small jar from the shelf and returned to the table. The jar had strange writing on its sides. Billy didn't recognize any of them. He'd just gotten happy about recognizing some letters, but these denied him.
Can I give you something, Billy? Something important.
Billy shifted nervously in his seat. So much had happened today that he wasn't sure if he was ready for more to happen. Things in the city happened far too fast, and he hadn't been given time to prepare for any of it. He felt as if he should run out of the cabin and fall to the ground far below, but even then things would happen quickly. He wanted everything just to slow down. That was all. Just slow down and allow him to process what was going on.
Billy!
Seth snapped his fingers.
I'm sorry. Yes. What did you want to give me?
Seth smiled.
You're just a boy, aren't you?
I'm 18.
As I said, you're just a boy. It's a pity that you've been mixed up in such events. Even worse so that Iman has gotten you involved. Listen carefully, Billy. I won't have time to repeat myself.
Seth opened the jar and pulled out 3 items. The first looked a lot like a tiny brown hand, its fingers wrinkled and twisted like a tangled weed. The black wiry hairs on the back of the hand moved by a phantom breeze that Billy couldn't feel. Seth let out a small grunt of satisfaction as he placed this onto the glass table.
What's that?
Seth looked mildly annoyed by the question.
Save your questions. I will answer them all in a moment.
Sorry.
Seth nodded his acceptance of the apology and continued. The second item he removed looked as much like a rock as any other rock Billy had seen. Small, brown, and quite unimpressive.
Is that a rock?
Seth sighed, but didn't answer. Instead, he produced the last item, a long, slender metal rod with leaves and flowers carved into its surface and spiraling from the bottom of the rod to the top, though it was difficult to tell which was which.
Shiny.
Indeed. Please pay attention. These items are very important and can very well save your life. As I said, I have precious little time, and I don't wish to repeat myself.
Billy swallowed hard, ate another slice of meat, 2 really, then focused on what Seth said.
This rod,
Seth read his hand along its length,
is carved from the finest silver. You'll notice that both ends are rounded. If you find yourself in trouble, strike either end on the ground, and instantly roots will take hold, even through the hardest stone. Massive, thorny bushes will grow and bar the way, for a time, of any who may be pursuing you.
That's really strange. Why would I need a bush to protect me?
Just trust my judgment that this will come in handy. The leaves of this bush will protect you from magical as well as physical attack, allowing you to either get away or gather your wits.
Seth handed the silver rod to Billy. He traced the simple vine pattern with his finger, entranced by its beauty. He tucked the rod into his shirt.
This, what looks like nothing more than a simple rock, can be an interesting weapon. Simply push it like so.
Seth pushed on the rock and it divided into 2. No, it didn't divide, but created a copy of itself.
And when you throw this at the ground, or at a person, it'll grow in size until it strikes that person. By placing it in your hand, you can make as many copies as you need, and continue to throw those copies. Just don't lose the original.
How will I know which is the original?
The copy is gray in color. The original is the reddish-brown. Make sure you don't ever throw the original. Be very, very careful not to throw the original. Do you understand?
Why don't I throw the original?
Let me just say that bad things will happen should you drop the original to the ground.
Bad things to me or to the rock?
This isn't just a simple rock. Perhaps I shouldn't give this to you.
No, I can take care of it. Honest, original isn't gray. Only throw the gray ones. I've got it. That's really neat, too.
Indeed.
Seth handed Billy both stones.
Just place it in your hand and press it. You'll make a copy that you can throw.
Billy did this several times and made a half dozen copies before putting the handful of rocks into his pocket.
Don't throw the red one. Got it.
Very well.
Hey, what's that last hand-looking thing? That looks really interesting.
Seth picked up the hand. For the first time, Billy noticed the rings, gold bands, that Seth wore on each finger. Plain gold bands that separated his fingers from his hands in a manner that didn't look natural. His hands had age spots and wrinkles befitting a man of Seth's apparent age, but his fingers looked like a teenager's, like Billy's, smooth and strong. Billy was about to open his mouth to ask about that, but Seth started speaking.
This hand you must place on Iman. It doesn't matter if he sees you do it or not, but you must put this on him. Once his hand is on his person, I can monitor what he is doing, and if need be, capture him.
Has Iman done something wrong?
Nothing that I can prove, and nothing that he'd admit to. But I assure you, Billy, if I can capture him, I shall.
Seth handed Billy the hand. Billy twisted the dried appendage in his fingers and looked at it from all sides. On the clenched palm, A loopy, scrolling writing of letters that Billy couldn't identify covered every inch. Billy looked over and placed it in his pouch with the rocks.
Is that everything?
Billy, it is critical that you get that hand on Iman as soon as you can. Do you have any way to get to him?
Well, no, not really. I don't even think he's in the stadium. I only saw him in his tower before Fat and Jack and me went to the stadium to protect Celine.
I've flown past his tower. If he were there, I'd know it. He must be in the stadium, and based on the high fluctuations of power in and around it, I fear that he's up to something. Again, I can't be certain that it's him doing this, but I must assume and prepare for the worst. So, if you can get near him and put that hand on him, it'll allow me to keep track of what he's doing. It's designed to cling to him, and he'll not be able to remove it.
He seems like a good guy, though. I mean, I just got into town and he gave me a job. What could he be up to?
That's what I'd like to know.
Seth sat back and rubbed his pudgy chin.
Oh, how I'd like to know.
Why?
Let's just say that I'm protecting what's mine.
Is Celine yours?
Seth laughed heartily.
That's funny. No one owns a person. Not in this city. But what is mine, Iman is threatening. I'll just leave it at that. Now, I really think we should get that pilot to drop you off.
So, I've got a couple of things to protect myself, and a hand to put on Iman. Where do you think he is in the stadium?
I'm afraid you'd know better than I. Perhaps your friends know where he is, and you can use them to help you locate Iman. Now I really must attend to my work here. Please, go back up and tell the pilot where you'd like to be dropped off.
Visions of plummeting to the ground filled Billy's head. He laughed at the thought.
Thank you.
Oh no, my boy.
Seth pulled a pipe out from a drawer on the small table next to his chair. He took a couple of test puffs on the pipe before lighting it.
Thank you.
Billy nodded his head and went back into the front with the pilot. After informing the pilot that he wanted to be dropped off right back where he'd been picked up from, he started having second thoughts. From so high above the stadium, everything looked small and moved by slowly, but the pilot took the Dragon low and sped past the buildings. He'd said he'd be slow enough for him to drop right back on the platform he came from, but Billy wasn't so sure. The Dragon crested the rim of the stadium, and Billy, once again hanging from the Dragon's claws and worried about the stabbing pain in his shoulder, the stitches must have separated by now. He tensed for the drop. Something tugged at the inside of his shirt, and he could feel it sliding. The rod. The Dragon swooped down toward the stage to drop Billy where he started the trip, and with both hands wrapped around a massive claw. The silver rod continued its downward slide as the Dragon's flight slowed and almost halted just over the stage. Billy, hanging nearly upside down, tried to get his face in a position to grab the silver rod should it slide out from his shirt, but he had to let go. If he didn't let go right now, he'd be hanging under the Dragon as it flew away. But he wasn't in position. He was losing the silver rod that would cause the thorny bush to appear when it struck the ground. He scanned quickly, looking for the platform he'd left on, and could see it, but too far away for him to try and jump to. Perhaps if he kicked off just right. The silver rod slid out of his shirt and began a rapid descent to the stage's canopy. Billy tightened his jaw and focused on it, and let go. He knew he was only 10 or 15 feet above the canopy, and when his stomach rose into his throat and he couldn't breathe during the fall, he lost sight of everything. He couldn't even make out the surface of the canopy to try and navigate away from the beams and the catwalks beneath. The silver rod blurred and disappeared.
No!
Billy forced himself to take a deep breath, but it only remained in his lungs for an instant before he struck one of the support beams. Through his fading vision, he saw the black canopy kick up and shoot the silver rod into the air. He tried to kick his feet, to move his arms, to do anything to catch it, but his body refused to cooperate. He flopped like a wounded fish, and he could feel blood seep from his shoulder and leg. He knew the stitches had popped. With a landing like he'd just suffered, there was no way they'd stay. He stayed focused on the rod, even as the black dragon swooped up and out of the stadium, staying out of the torch spots and exiting unseen. But Billy had to get that silver rod. He couldn't just leave it sitting on the canopy. But it had gone over 2 supports. It vibrated and moved slightly due to the sounds coming up from the stage below, but no, it wasn't going anywhere, and neither was Billy. His head bobbed several times, and his body shook as he tried to catch his breath. 3 times his vision went black and came back into focus. He was certain that he felt the vibration of the orb in his pocket at least 2x. Could they have seen him land on top of the stage? Billy rolled onto his back and lay balanced on the support beam, his body stretched along it long ways. The canopy sloped to the back of the stage, past the platform, and he could see two other ladders that led down to the back of the stage. The silver rod slowly made its way past the platform, but Billy's brain wouldn't let him care. He couldn't care, but he had to care. He had to get up. He had more important things other than this silver rod to take care of, but this silver rod would help him do those things. He had to protect Selene. He had to find Iman and put the strange hand on him. Seth had given him more responsibility. He couldn't let anyone down. He'd never let anyone down, and he wasn't about to start now. Billy got slowly to his feet and walked along the support beam. He moved faster than the silver rod and crossed the platform to retrieve it. This time he placed it inside his pouch, and then made his way to the back of the stage. With his wounds reopened, he needed to find the doctor person and get restitched before he could go back on stage. Then he could let Fat and Jack know where he'd been and why he'd been away. He stepped lightly as he made his way down the ladder to the floor below. He passed the giant pin that Steve had pointed out that would collapse the stage. Billy was sure that it took a dragon to pull it out. It was so big. A gigantic eye bolt nearly as tall as him. Billy stepped onto the floor behind the stage. Three stagehands, including Steve, helped him as soon as he was off the ladder. "Billy, what happened?"
"I had a little problem. Think you can find the doctor for me? I need him to redo my stitches."
"Alan, Jessic, go get the doctor, quickly." The other two stagehands ran off. Steve helped Billy to the table where Phil sat.
"Easy does it. You're almost there. Boy, you look like you've taken on a dragon all by yourself."
Billy laughed at just how close Steve was to being correct.
"You should see the other guy."
Steve laughed at this, and Billy sighed. He'd been worried that perhaps they'd seen Seth's dragon fly over the stadium, but apparently with all the work they needed to do during the concert, they didn't have much time for looking up. The job, after all, was at the crowd level, not in the sky.
"Billy!"
Phil stood up as soon as he noticed the two approaching.
"What happened to you?"
"It's a long story. I need to see the doctor first."
"Steve, go find the doctor. I'll take care of Billy."
"I already sent Alan and Jessica to..."
"I don't care who you sent. You can help them. Billy needs help. Go."
Steve moved quickly. Phil's loud tone could be scary. Billy was just glad to have him on his side. But when Steve moved, Billy's legs turned to rubber and he nearly collapsed. Phil grabbed him with one massive hand and navigated him to a seat. Billy barely felt the seat. Suddenly all he wanted to do was sleep. A long sleep like he'd take after a hard day's work in the North. He longed for the cold, for the snow, and for the simple life of the North. Dragons, concerts, singers, cities, aliens, chain stores. This wasn't the life. This was torture. But he'd given his word, and he was going to see this day through. Nothing would stop him from doing that. Not Stump, not Iman, not Jack or Fat. No one.
"Where have you been? I thought you were on stage. Someone said you disappeared."
Billy's ears perked up, and he looked at Phil.
"Who told you that?"
"One of the stagehands said you were no longer on the stage."
Was Phil keeping an eye on him? That didn't sound right. They'd fought together. Why would Phil be watching him? And why had the monsters in Celine's dressing room attacked him before attacking her? Billy wanted to ask all these questions and more, but instead he was saved from having to when the doctor arrived.
"Oh dear me, looks like someone has been taking it easy."
The doctor set down his case and immediately set to work on Billy's wounds. All the while, Billy only stared at Phil, trying to discern by looking into the tiny black dots that were Phil's eyes, the jagged teeth that scarred his face, and his brown scales. Billy didn't want to, but he had to assume that anyone, anyone, who had access to Selene and could get close to her was a potential danger to her. That meant Phil, too. Billy felt guilty for thinking that, but he had to. He couldn't let his feelings get in the way. He hadn't known any of these people for more than a day, and he'd been far too trusting to this point.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to The Continuing Adventures of Billy Barbarian. For more information on this book and its author, please visit ofgnomesanddwarves.com or jrmurdoch.com. And again, thank you for listening.